Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So Jeff Hurst, the Trevor Brooking and Billy Bones, a Paolo Di Canio, a West Ham United. We celebrate our victories, we stick together in defeat. I'm proud of our history, the West Ham United, more than just a podcast, more than just a podcast.
Hello, good evening everyone, and welcome to More Than Just a Podcast. It's episode 41 of whatever season it is, I can't remember now. If you've not heard episode 40, go back, have a listen. It's me and Johnny Bucci and Sean talking about the Burnley and the Freiburg away game. But this is now time for... Oh, we've got to do this first. I'm in my shed. Just me, Billy, no mates. It's Ask Nigel anyway. And now, for this.
It's the Dead Christian Time.
Frankly, I've only done that just to prove to Sean I did have the jingles. But anyway, yes, Facebook, Twitter question time, where you, the listeners, get to ask me, the only presenter left, anything you want. And I asked on Twitter and said, just Nigel, ask me anything. And a few people have. Here we go. So let's start. There's quite a few that have come on as I open it up. Question time, but only with me. So Ask Nigel. Could be good. Probably will crash and burn. But it depends on you lots. So let's have a look. First up. All comments, bang, wow, there's quite a few, right, Cheeky Lions is the first one. How you doing, Steve? Hope you well, evening, he says, hope you well. He said, was having a salt through the lift. I'm guessing he meant the loft, unless he lives in a really big house and he has got a lift. But I was sorting through the loft today and forgot about this little gem I bought years ago. Have you got one? It don't really work well on podcasts, but frankly, it's a model of Upton Park on a wooden board. And yes, I have cheeks. I have got one. It says, as for the game, I'll take the draw. We're still seventh in the league. It's all good. And he goes, thanks as always. Brady at and Kaczynski at. Cheeky being a postman, not a fan of Kaczynski, and I don't blame him either. Well, you've heard what I thought. If you heard before what I thought of the Burnley game, I'll take the draw all day long. It was felt like a win, didn't it, at the end? I can say that now. Next up is Jonathan Bish. We don't get to bash him, though. Evening, Nigel, he says. Hope you will. He said, we started a new role at work, which meant I missed the game on Sunday. Well, Jake, what job you got that you work on a Sunday? He said, I offered the ticket to Mrs. B to go with our son, and she ended up being ill all week, so the needle went. He said, but we both agree we had a lucky escape. He said, my first question is, when has your bad luck ever turned out to be a good thing? And his second question is, I've still yet to get the Freiburg ticket. In your opinion, are we going to get a performance, in which case I'll stump up the cash for some decent seats, or is it going to be as bad as the first leg and I'll just settle for tier 6? Everyone out. Well, Johnny Boy, first question. Has your bad luck ever turned out to be a good thing? In regards West Ham, one time I can remember it, we had Wimbledon away on a Boxing Day. Never used to miss Boxing Day games, always there. And this time I was ill, and I was very ill. I got dressed. I was struggling to sort of get a decent breath. And I was just sitting there all flued up, feeling sorry at myself. And the missus is going to me, listen, you're effing mad. What are you doing? You shouldn't be up, let alone going football. And in the end, I relented, rung my mates up and said, you better come and get the ticket. And my mate was going to take his brother. And on the way to the game, it got called off because of the weather. And they replayed it in the March, I believe. And I got to go. So and that cheered me up. I know it shouldn't have done. My mates got the one of my mates didn't get to go to the game, but hey, never mind. I quickly had the ticket back. Second question said it's with about a Freiburg ticket. I think it's going to be a great win. I've just predicted a 3-1 victory on the podcast. Nothing that you'd have also heard. I slept through most of the game, I must admit, the first leg on the sofa. But from what I've seen on the highlights, we were two evenly matched teams out in Freiburg, and I think we'll be a lot better in the second leg. So get your ticket, mate. Even though you could do what I did, I just bought a 30 quid ticket at the back. I think there's going to be loads of empty spaces, and I feel sorry for the people that bought when it was advertised at 8 o'clock kickoff, and it's only going to be a 5:45. So good luck to everyone that can get there. I will definitely be there. And I do feel bad for those that were bought tickets and are going to miss out because it's not an 8 o'clock kickoff, because it's scandalous. Next up is my favourite Canadian, apart from Palumi. It's Barry Meikle. Evening, Nige, he says. Interesting to see Opta have predicted us to finish 8th from 55 points ahead of Chelsea and Brighton on goal difference. We need some big wins in those 10 games if we're going to overturn that deficit. We gained one more point on the barometer this weekend compared to last year. We're scheduled to finish on 52 if results go the same way as last season. How many do you think we'll finish with? Because there's some tough fixtures to come. Well, Baz, I think that when you look at the barometer, we've got some games coming up. Palace away, I believe we lost that. I think we could get a point there, maybe all three. There was quite a few games that we've lost where I think we'll lose the Newcastle game. Obviously, not got much hope, really, if I'm being realistic. The Man City game, but the Luton game we should win. I think the Fulham game we'll win. I think there's a good, we could get a point at Wolves, maybe. Who knows with the Villa game, though. I do think we'll get beat after beating Freiburg. So I think we're probably good for another 12 to 14 points. I think we can probably get seventh. And whether that's good enough for Europe or not, still to be seen. Because at the moment, it's only the top six guaranteed Europe. Seventh spot only get Europe if the FA Cup winners are currently already qualified for Europe. So that means we can't have Chelsea winning the FA Cup, people. So, or Newcastle, I believe, are still in it. So that's what we need to hope for. But there are some tough fixtures to come. But that's the beauty of West Ham, isn't it? The beauty of West Ham, we beat Brentford 4-2. At home, and we'd draw the games either side of that, one all against Bournemouth and two all against Burnley. But goals are fun, people, and we are scoring goals at the moment. Next up, it's Dave's son. It's my good mate, Ted Sexton. Evening, Nige, he says. I'm looking forward to this. We'll be the judge of it at the end, or you lot will be the judge of it at the end. He said, you got to give credit to that Fofana goal. Absolute class. But Areola to the rescue again. He said, with your knowledge, is there in our history a worse financial deal for a player than the one with Phillips for such a short deal? You could say that there is. I mean, if you look at some of the bad transfers that we've pulled off and lost money on. I mean, if you look at Haller, I mean, we got some goals out of him, but I think we lost 15 to 20 million when we sold him. If you look at Savio, I mean, there was quite a chunk of transfer fee paid out, and we never got anything back for him. He just disappeared, didn't he? So, there will be, those out there. Obviously, it's highlighting the finances. You have to pay more because we've got him from a club like Man City, so his wages are going to be high. And frankly, I think he's a good player to have in the squad, but he's obviously not earned his starting lineup yet. And I think another spell on the bench is what's needed. He needs to come off and prove it. But we'll see. Everybody, look, Danny Ings, Sheffield United done really well. Had to sit it out, come back in, had his best 10, 15 minutes for West Ham. So hopefully we'll get to see the best of him to come. So there's always a chance they can turn it around, Ted. But thanks for the question. Ooh, moving swiftly on. It could be a short one, because it could be the shortest question time, but the amount of questions, because it's only me. I've got nobody else to ask. I could say to Sean, what do you think? And Sean would just say this. Which is, frankly, probably the best time he's ever answered a question. But still, we'll move on. Next up, we got the Bicester Hammer himself. Oh, Grant Coxford. Evening, Nige. Which TV mum would you have liked to be your mum? Brady out, Sullivan out. That's a tough question. A TV mum, I've got to think of them. I mean, the one that I suppose springs to mind would be Peggy Mitchell in EastEnders. Get out of my pub. I mean, it would have been great if my mum owned a pub. She didn't, but still, it would have been good. But, my mum could shout at the best of them, still does. But to be fair, I wouldn't swap my mum for any other mother, to be fair, Grant. I'm a proper mother's boy. There you go. Brady out and Sullivan out, says Grant, which is what we want to hear. Next up, it's the lovely, it's the goddess of South Woodford, Forest Gate, Belinda Kai Kitis. Evening, lovely Nigel, says. So I spent my Mother's Day watching what I can only describe as turgid football game. That's a bit harsh, Bill. My questions are, here we go. Does Moyes last till the end of the season if we go out of Europe on Thursday? And can we agree that Phillips, Ward-Prowse, Souček in midfield is pants and makes the three creative players look terrible? I genuinely don't know why we got Phillips on loan. She loves the show and she's given me three kisses. There you go. Thank you very much, Bill, for those. Ooh, let's go. One, does Moyes last till the end of the season if we go out of Europe on Thursday? Well, of course he does, Bill. To be fair, Bill, he could last till next season as well, even if we go out of Europe on Thursday. If we use John Bishy's outcome, or what he said, or what Opta were going for, Barry Meikle, not John Bishy's, that we'll finish 8th on 55 points. That's a, in a way, it's not his highest, 6th, 7th, 14th and 8th. That's still a fantastic achievement for West Ham. If you look at the history of where we are as a club, well, where we have been as a club, finishing 8th, top 8, is a great achievement. I think we finished 6th 3 times, maybe 4 at max. Obviously, 3rd under John Lyle was highest. I think Lyle had an 8th place. I think Harry had an 8th place. I'd be surprised if we finished top 8. 10 times in our history, I'd be surprised. So 8th is a good achievement for West Ham United. Us fans may think we should be finishing higher, but is that our expectations rather than what the club's genuine position in league pecking order is? It depends, I suppose, on the seven that finish above you, realistically. But, you know, if we look at it and we understand it, that, you know, there is the big six, of which, you know, we're definitely above Chelsea at the moment. So, therefore, you'd be looking, there's a club there that could be replaced in the six. You could look at Newcastle, maybe a seventh, or Aston Villa a seventh. You know, obviously Brighton, not really. We should be looking to finish above Newcastle and Brighton. And so only Villa, realistically. So 7th or 8th spot, good achievement for me. Anything in top 10, realistically, is pretty decent for West Ham. Whether we like the way we've got there, that's a different argument. And I get it, people don't like the way we've achieved it. But at the end of the day, with Premier League placings earning you about £2 million, he is good for the business side. He ain't really good for the football side, but we have our fluctuations with it. As for your second part, agreeing with Phillips, Ward-Prowse and Souček in midfield, pants, well, the three of them together obviously don't work, and it is really, it does put a lot of pressure, well, it did put a lot of pressure on Pakatar, Bowen and Caduce, and it was no surprise, was it, realistically, in losing the two of them, bringing on Alvarez, who's probably the best defensive midfielder we got, but also can go forward and attack as well, as he's shown, you know, then we're obviously a better player, a better team overall. And as we said in the previous podcast, shock horror, you put more attacking players on the pitch, don't be surprised, you'll create more chances and maybe score more goals. So yes, I mean, genuinely, you say you don't know why we got Phillips on loan. If it's a club we are looking to progress, we do need players like Phillips to be in the squad. I'm not saying in the first team, but if the bench, if we pick our best 11, our strongest 11, that is a team that if it can play every game, I think could get sixth spot. But we know that players are not going to play every game, and this is where we're lacking. We can't get the type of players that we need to sit on the bench and wait their turn. It just won't ever happen at West Ham, and unless we get taken over by billionaires and we can throw silly money around. You know, Calvin Phillips ain't going to spend 2 years at West Ham sitting on the bench like he did at Man City. The reason he did it at Man City was, one, he got paid a lot, and two, he won medals just for sitting there. Well, he ain't going to get that at West Ham, is he? So, and that's why other players of his ilk are not going to do it. But they're still good. If we want to progress, we need players like Phillips in and around the squad. Oh, how am I doing, people? All right, we crack on. Next up, it's old Mr. 1970s himself. It's Jason Backhouse. Oh, evening, Nige. He says, where do I start after yesterday? He's not a Phillips fan. He said, how is Phillips ever classed as a Premier League player? He's not that by any stretch of the imagination. But why drop Alvarez for Phillips? I'll answer that quickly, because a lot of people, though, do go on about how Moyes loves to flog a dead horse. He will push the players. You know, he's got to rotate. He's got to give them a rest. He gives Alvarez a rest. You know, people criticise him now for doing it. So, you know, we can't have it both ways. If you think players can't play every game, or two games or three games in a week, and they need a rest, well, then he's got to do it. When do you do it? Well, you do it when you're playing the worst club in the league. Now, it did nearly bite him on the bum, and you could argue he got out of trouble. That's the way I see it. Is that if you're going to rest your players, you do it against the lesser team. But anyway, it shows how we do need to have strength on the bench. He said, surely the only reason can be that Phillips was a Moyes signing. Mm-hmm. Ward-Prowse is a one-trick pony who only knows how to pass one way, and that is backwards. I disagree with you, Jace, because I've seen him pass sideways quite a few times. So that's pretty, you know, so that's a bit harsh. And the funny thing I'd say about the thing about with Ward Prowse is that because we had Creswell on the pitch, we still had someone that could take the corners just as well. So, yeah, I mean, Ward Prowse, I think there's a good player there. And maybe he needs a bit of help in midfield. Maybe having Ward Prowse with Souček and Phillips is a problem. Anyway, Jason goes. He says, he sits in the Billy Bonds low, and there are three season ticket holders in front of me that only come to the big games, Arsenal, Man City, he says. With the amount of people on the waiting list, ho, 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 I say, for season tickets is my solution. You have to attend at least half of the home games to allow you to buy a season ticket for the next season. Not quite sure how you'd manage this, but what do you think? That's a tough one. Jason, I know a few clubs now are looking at this and what they do. I think Man United are looking at it, and Arsenal definitely are. Arsenal are definitely monitoring how you go to games and where you get your tickets from. That's two different things, because they suspended 300 members, Arsenal, who had bought their tickets off of a ticket tout on a ticket in exchange. So that's how in-depth they are. But they are also monitoring their season ticket holders. And if they are seen not to be tender, I think they've gone over half. I think it might be two-thirds that they're going to be written to and at least given a warning for this season. If it continues, they'll have the season ticket withdrawn. Now, you can do that when you're Arsenal, when you've got 60,000 in the ground and another 20,000 that want to go. Let's face it, we all seen it, that there was the thing that came out the other day, the first nine games of the season, two of which were European Cup games, genuinely had 50-odd thousand in the ground. We averaged just over 45,000 actually in the ground. Now, that's an 18,000 drop on the attendance, of the official attendance, 62,000. Where are these 18,000 people? Why don't they come? Various reasons for it. The big problem stems from the way they sold the tickets originally. What am I going back now? I'm going back, blimey, it was 2014, 2015, nearly 10 years ago, when they had the sales centre, when you had to go to Stratford, to the sales centre, to buy your ticket. West Ham were worried they wouldn't sell the tickets, so the salespeople were on commission, were told, sell, 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 and they pushed every spare ticket they could. They told people, buy it as a kid's ticket, you can upgrade it. It was that policy, allowed by the club, they knew what was going on, that's created this mess in the situation where we get season ticket holders that have bought so cheap. The waiting list, was it ever genuine 50,000? I'm not so sure. West Ham's own original figures prior to the move were that we would average 50,000 a game. And yet it looks like we're getting less than that now. So be that as it is. Night games are difficult. A lot of people can't get down to them. The West Ham fan base, as we know, it goes round the world. But match attending now, they come from the four corners of the country. And it is difficult to get to games sometimes on a Monday night. And or if the trains ain't running, there's work wherever people were coming from. There was trains that were cancelled this weekend. Lines weren't running. And people, you know, would look at that and think, blimey. We all know how difficult it is getting in and out when trains are running off Stratford. After a while, people do get fed up with it and will pick and choose their games. And you can see that, Burnley, you know, it's not a big draw. But you know what, people? That's the way it's always been. At Upton Park, you could go to games and there'd be 28,000 there, not 35. But then when the Arsenals and the Man U's turned up, you probably could have got another 20,000 into Upton Park if they'd allowed it. It's always been the same. It's always been the same. And it always probably will be. I'm not a fan of this, you got to go to after games or we're taking the season ticket away, though. Because if the club are happy to take the money, that's the way it is. You got to encourage the people. You know, you got the ticket trader that possibly could encourage the people to sell back. You get people like You know, I've got my son-in-law. He can only go after games because he works shifts. And with the chopping and changing of the fixtures, it's very difficult for him. You know, but when he goes, I want him to sit next to me. So this is what we have to do. So, you know, it's difficult for me to answer subjectively there, Jace. But thanks for the message. Oh, next up, it's old Chris Savile Row. He said, how are we doing? As our youth squads continue to do well, but then when the players are loaned out individually, they seem to struggle. Should we be looking within for a new first team boss? I know Keane has had a go before, but he's now at a point he's overachieving with these teams in the youth leagues. Kevin Keane, I think, has had three cracks as caretaker manager, believe it or not. I think he's possibly, I'd have to double check, I think he's lost them all. I'll quickly look that up. So it's not a great record, but when you're the caretaker manager, you're generally taking over a team that's playing really bad, possibly been relegated, and you're getting a team that that can just take over as and when they like. So I'm just trying to look up Kevin Keane's records. So let's have a look. Keane, he stepped in for one game, I think Sunderland, in 2011 after Avram Grant was sacked. He stepped in for a game when Kerbishley was sacked. And then, well, there was another time, I thought. No, oh, just a twice then. So he's had two cracks at it. I know he definitely lost a Sunderland game. In fact, he lost both games, people. So his first game, we lost 3-2 to West Brom. There you go. Which was our first defeat of the season. After Kerbishley had walked away from the club. So I'm not sure. I get where you're going with it, though, because it's funny, Harry Kane only came to the fore at Tottenham after they appointed Tim Sherwood, who had been the youth coach and worked with Harry at Tottenham. And he'd brought him back from the loans and shoved him in the first team, stuck with him, and then the goals started to flow. And I do think without Tim Sherwood being the Tottenham manager, Harry Kane, I think he still would have been the great goal scorer he is, but I don't think he'd have done it for Tottenham all the years because they would have got rid of him. They wouldn't have took a chance on him. But the other thing you've got to look at, Chris, is just because under-18s are winning tournaments and trophies, what we always seem to forget there is they're playing other 16, 17, 18-year-olds. They're not playing against seasoned pros. Or you know, the best youth, the highest quality youngsters will actually be in the first team. So they may not match up against them. So you have to look at that. And you do have to look back on all the kids that have been released that the club's been criticised for. You know, recently, you know, where's Sonny Perkins? He's gone to Leeds. What's he done there? They don't want him. They're not playing him. Harrison Ashby, he's gone to Newcastle. Probably a good place to be, but is it working out for him? Don't see him playing. You know, Grady Diagana, we got 18 million for, which is great for an academy player. 18 million pound, that's a great transfer for a young. He's now coming good at West Brom. He's playing regular and he's now getting in the goals. That's 2-3 years after he's left us, so. You know, there's always going to be players that do well. There's always going to be players that will disappear. But how many have really embarrassed us? And the answer is, you know, even I'd argue that if Diagana does come back into the Premier League, the fact that we got 18 million says that's a good deal. That's, you know, we haven't let him go for nothing. He ain't walked away from us. The other one is Ngakia. You know what? Crashed and burned. Watford? I don't know. Once they leave, they've left to me. Next up is the Colonel himself, Mr. Richie Kemp. He's got a quick question. He said, he says, I get why many fans are not enamoured by the manager and his style. He said, but what I don't get, and neither do I, Rich, is the total hatred so many fans have for him. For me, he's an honest man who's done an excellent job. Not really bothered if he stays or goes in the summer, but why do you think the feelings run so deep for so many fans? It's a tough one. I mean, it's difficult. Some people like to throw Sam Allardyce at me and about the way. I never took the Allardyce. My argument to that is I'd have sacked Allardyce the day after he was appointed, or the day he was appointed, his first press conference. I'd never would have appointed him, actually. So I wouldn't have needed to sack him. I'd never have given him the job. Would I have given Dave Moyes a job at West Ham? Yeah, I probably would have done, to be honest. I think Moyes plays a conservative brand of football, but it's not the long ball of the, you know, Harry Bassett at Wimbledon, the Graham Taylor at Watford, and the Sam Allardyce at Bolton type, where you launch it long. And Allardyce is proud, you know. Allardyce will still, you know, believes that his type of football, and I suppose there is, you know, a home for that type of football to be played in the Premier League. It's not for me. I'm not saying that Moyes is his brand of football. It can be exciting, as we see in the second half. We were entertained in the second half, and the fans got behind them. We could see we were attacking and having a go. If we could play like that, that'd be fantastic. If we could play like that. But it's not often that we do, is it? It's not often that we do. As for the outright way fans, yeah, I don't get it. At the end of the day, you know, if you want to compare Moyes and Allardyce, as some people like to throw at me, Moyes has actually achieved far more at West Ham than Allardyce ever done. Allardyce's top finish, I think, was 10th. And he had us in good positions at times. And his own stubbornness and negativity, you know, actually ruined it. You know, where he took us from the edge of fourth and dropped us down the league to 10th. You know, because of that's out of his own stubbornness, I suppose. Allardyce the other day, you know, had a crack about, in you know, what West Ham manager's ever been popular with the fans. And to some point, you could argue he was right in what he said, that every manager, you know, Pellegrini got abuse. But this is the funny thing is, I don't think Pellegrini got the abuse that Moyes got. Obviously Slav never got, I mean, I love Slav, don't get me wrong. I'd have loved for him, I wouldn't have sacked him. I'd have stuck with him, and hopefully he'd have got it out. But then again, he's gone other places, and he did well at West Brom. I think got them promoted. Didn't really do well with Watford, though. But then again, Watford have had 21 managers in 10 years. And when you think that West Ham have had 17 in 124, you know, therein lies the story there, that no one really succeeds at Watford under this ownership. But yeah, the treatment of him is OTT, and I don't like it. Next up, my good friend, Mr. Paul Noland. Evening all. Beep, beep, says the showrunner. As Mavropanos scored another own goal, he goes 3, I think, for the season. My question is this: which West Ham player scored the most amount of own goals in a season? And he thinks, I will know. That's it from me. Ta-ta. If that is Mavropanos' third own goal, the one thing I don't keep a list of is own goals. I think that would give him the record. I think Lucas Neal's got 2 own goals. I'm not sure they were done in the same season. James Collins got a few own goals. There's not many West Ham players with own goals. So it's possible that Mavropanos has not only scored the most own goals in the season, might have scored the most own goals as a West Ham player. Full stop, Paul. I'll find out and let you know, though, mate. We will see. Next up is Mr. Richard Ticket Stubbington. He said, was Brentford a false dawn against a poor side? And why doesn't Moyes send us out to play with the attempt we had in the second half against Burnley? Every game since Brentford has been back to the same old low block. Bit disingenuous there, Rich. Because every game since Brentford, I think, has been... Who's it been? I suppose... Was it Freiburg? I suppose. Was Forest after Brentford? I believe it was, yeah. Oh, well. Forest, of course, only won one game in the last six, I heard today. That's obviously was against us. Sometimes I do wonder what Moyes sees when you look at the fact that he would have watched us in that second half. He sees that and thinks, blimey, we could do that more often. So there is something in him, though, that makes him always fall back to the old way. Or the dark side, we could call it. But he's no Darth Vader like Allardyce is. Martin Rowe, Sports. Next up, my worry is if we start like on Thursday, we will lose. I'm not impressed with our centre-halves. Well, we ain't spoke about that, the centre-halves pairing. Agared again, I thought. Looks a bit off. Mavropanos will give the ball away, bad passes or whatever. I think our strongest centre back pairing would be Zouma and Ogbonna, but Ogbonna's 36, 37, and Zouma's knees are about 39. So it is at the centre of defence where, you know, we can't seem to find the right pairing. And I don't know about move all four, and I think a Gerd probably does want out, and he can go. Zouma looks like he needs to be put out, so maybe another two coming in. But if we can get another two in, it's possible that we could, you know, Zouma, you could say with his knees, he could go on the bench. That strengthens the bench at the back, bring in another couple of centre halves, let a Gerd go, and, you know, we might have strengthened there by keeping Zouma out. He's still got a contract. Would you strengthen this area in the summer? You've just heard me, Mark, what I think. Definitely I would. I would be moving a Gerd on. I'm happy to keep. See what Ogbonna. I'd be happy to keep Ogbonna. I'd bring in another, move a Gerd out, bring in another two, and push Zouma and Ogbonna onto the bench and see where we are. Next up, it's Dan Numbers. People talking about VAR and overlooking a poor setup from the manager and implementation from the players. Oh, I'm not sure about that. I think people are talking about both. I mean, we could argue about the VAR decision against us. I don't think we covered it on the podcast. Where the bloke heads it, then catches the ball. If anything, that was more of a penalty shout than the Freiburg one, which, you know, I've said I didn't agree was a penalty. Don't think it was. But we'll, you know, I get that the saying is if it comes up the player's own body and falls down, but the bloke literally looked like he caught the ball and then dropped it. So that was both arms on the ball. Though we don't have the arms in the unnatural position, because obviously when you jump, your arms will drop down. And as I said on the podcast, if you've heard it before, what is unnatural position? Because when you football, your legs and your arms do happen to go into different positions. Oh, Dan then follows up. Callum Marshall's not even making the bench at West Brom. Was this another garbage loan option by the club, or are we simply not producing good enough players? Are the new financial rules encouraging clubs to produce players to sell, then bring into the first team? Brady out. Well, two things there. I mean, Callum Marshall to West Brom, I thought it'd be a good move. If he was up to the task, I think they would be playing him. He's still a young lad. From what I've seen of him, I think he's got the makings of a good striker. So it's disappointing he hasn't been given a chance. But at the end of the day, West Brom are going for playoffs. They're not going to make automatics, but they want to cement themselves in the playoffs. And they've been scoring goals without him. They're not just going to play him just because we want him and they've took him on loan. So you maybe could look at, he might have been better off going to a lower down championship club, but we don't know who asked. West Brom might have been the only club that asked. So, who knows what went on there. But the problem we've had in the past for me is that we kept sending players out on loan to League One clubs, like the Nathan Dolans of the world and the Sonny Perkins. And what it looked like is we just produced League One players, that those players would be then sold on and they would then become League One players themselves. Are the new financial rules encouraging clubs to produce players selling to bring? Well, in a way they are. And if you look at the clever players, people always look at the big clubs and they will say, well, how comes Everton get it FFP and the likes of Man United can spend $1 billion on players? Well, the likes of Man United and those and the Arsenals and whatever can do that because twofold. One, they generate the income through match days, through a worldwide fan base selling shirts and everything else, and they get the income in that way that enables them to not have to be, you know, handcuffed by FFP. Now, if you look at a club like Chelsea, a few years ago, Chelsea...
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
He had, I think, 30-odd players on loan. Well, now we know why. Because these are players that were in their academy. And they're finding that without European football, now they're having to sell their academy players that have come in and done really well in the first team. So it could be that Conor Gallagher, who's been Chelsea captain this season, may have to be sold for Chelsea to meet FFP regulations. So that's because Chelsea haven't finished in the top floor and been in the Champions League of European football spaces. So their income has fallen to such that they're now relying on selling them to meet the regulations, such as our clubs are. You know, that's why, in a way, 105 million for Declan Rice was a fantastic sell. Because it went straight across our FFP. Because the rules are, if it's a home-based academy by a player that you bought through the academy, it's 100% profit. There's not the trade-off of the previous fee. Brady out, says Dan. And so do a lot of us, I hope. Next up, it's the old mate, it's the old scarecrow himself. It's the sweet and tender hooligan. It's Mr. Richard Dodds. Good evening, boss, he says. Ah, bless you. Every time we go at teams, the results are positive and the football's good, so why doesn't David Moyes, with no threat of relegation, go for it? That's a good point as well, Dodds. We ain't going to go down. Why not have a go? Why not? If he had a go and finished ninth, I bet a lot of people would be happier than not having a go and finishing eighth. And all he's risking is £2 million. personally, I think quarterfinals of the UEFA Cup, or whatever you want to call it nowadays, I think is a fantastic achievement for West Ham. And throw that in with a top eight finish, that's bloody brilliant. But if we finished eighth by playing out these last few games by having a go, well, it might bring the fans back into the stadium, because I do think the drop-off on attendances is somewhat to do with the football that people are seeing as well. You know, there are, you know, people that just think, oh, I can't be bothered to go over there, trudge that bloody stadium and watch that crap. There's going to be people. He's got questions. What was the best decade in West Ham's history? And if you could do a podcast with one West Ham player from any part of our history, who would it be? And what's your first question? Ooh, that's a good one. There's a few. Brady out. Best decade in West Ham's history. Tough one. I mean, realistically, the golden years of West Ham, in a way, all the best things we achieved until 2023's Europa Conference League win were done in 16 years. And that was between 1964 and 1980. If you throw in our best league position, you could say from between 64 and 86. After 86, that was the end of the golden period of West Ham. So Lyle and Greenwood. If you had to pick one decade, I'd imagine you would have to go for the 1960s. You know, the highest Ron Greenwood finish, I think, was six. I think he achieved that in the 70s, madly enough. I don't think he did it in the 60s. We won the Cup in 64. We got to a League Cup semi-final. We got to a League Cup final when it was two-legged, but we lost that. We obviously won the European Cup Winners' Cup in 65. We were the backbone of the World Cup team in 66. I believe if Johnny Byrne hadn't been injured, we would have had a fourth player in the squad, let alone three. So realistically, I think that would have been and you know, those that watch football in the 60s, I don't know, you know, they would probably tell us that was, you know, but we all seem to enjoy the, when you ask a lot of people when's the best time to watch West Ham, you know, the football, you generally look back to when you was a kid, and I think that's because when we're kids, we don't actually we don't have any worries. We don't get too emotionally involved with it when we're kids. You know, if we lose, you know, listen, I've never cried over a defeat. When you see these kids crying at football games when we've lost everything, you know, sometimes I think, hey, come on, kid, that's football, you know, man up. Maybe me being harsh, I don't know. I'll leave that. I'll let you all judge me on that. But I just think that I look back at the times, and under when I started going in the mid 70s onwards, you know, I just loved going West Ham. You know, we got relegated in 78, 79. We didn't really do much in the league. I think we finished fifth or sixth. Only top three went up then. I think it was fifth actually. I mean, we had Pop Robson and David Cross up front, Brooking, Billy Bonds. You know, we'd started the season with a 5-2 win, still nothing. The following season, Paul Allen was integrated into the team, and then we had the fantastic cup run that did detract. You know, I think, I don't know if it was before the semi-final, we had to play Shrewsbury Town. And this is possibly as high as Shrewsbury had ever been as a football club. They've never been in top division, and they beat us 3-1. And I think, and generally that was because John Larwood rested a lot of the players. I might have been before the semi-final replay, I'm not sure. But anyway, I do remember that Shrewsbury game. So we had that in 80, but we won the cup, so all is forgiven. We were then promoted and everything else. So it's tough to choose a decade. Probably my second favourite decade would be the 90s, actually. Under Bill, Lou McCarvey started the 90s. Bill coming in, club legend. Football weren't great, but we, you know, we had. When you look at it, it was an eventful decade. The bond scheme came after promotion, and then that sort of killed the season. The fans were in uproar. Followed into the following season, but we managed. Bill then managed to get us promoted, but even then we blow it, don't we? We don't come up. We blew it in 91 on the last day. We got beat by Notts County. 93, we had the emotion of the Cambridge game where we go up by the fact that we scored one goal, which was the last goal, last minute goal scored by Clive Allen. Everybody went mad on the pitch against Cambridge. So we had all that to deal with in the 90s. Fallout with Harry and Bill, what happened, what didn't happen, who really knows? No one really knows. Well, two people really know, three if you include Peter Story maybe, but you know, we've only heard one side of the story and people don't seem to believe that. And then you go into the Artson and Kitson era, swiftly followed by the Di Canio era and everything that went on with that. So the 1990s, of recent times, the fun pack. And this decade's not gone too bad, has it, Dodds, really? But if I could podcast with one West Ham player from any part of our history, who would it be? What's your first question? Well, that was easy for me. There's one West Ham player I would like to sit down with and spend an hour with, and that would be Paul Ince. The first question would be... why did you do it? That would be my first question. I think Paul Ince would be a fantastic podcast guest. Next up is AI Sean. Nick Harvey, Yorkshire. Lads. Nigel Normitz. It is tonight. But I'm with all my mates, and I'm with my podcast family. Brady out. Sullivan out. Ooh, he's gone today. He's gone. Moyes out, though not in bold. So I don't know if he's still sitting on the fences. Sean. Freiburg, poor performance, but Dave was happy with a 1-0 defeat, which says it all, really. It's half-time, isn't it? Come on. He says, I can't see us getting past them this coming Thursday, unfortunately. Well, we did against Seville, and Seville were better than Freiburg, so we'll see. But the Freiburg did win at the weekend, but hey-ho. Burnley, it's a strange team set up against a poor side. Absolute shite first half. Get this, marginally better second half. Calvin Phillips, what he says, WTF. Well, I think we were better than marginally first. Come on, Nick. I know you're hard to please, but it's hard to please, isn't it? Blimey. Questions, he says. Who would be happy if they fell asleep now and woke up after the season's ended so they miss all their remaining games? Well, the way I've been recently, that might happen to me, but I wouldn't be happy at all. Will Moyes get Calvin Phillips up to speed before the end of the season? Not sure about that. And then a JWP and Caduceus now regressing under Moyes. JWP, listen, players are responsible for their own performances. I once asked a bona fide West Ham legend about how much do they take in what's said by the manager, and then when across the line, how much is on the manager and how much is on the players. And this is a bona fide cup goal scoring West Ham legend. And his reply to me was, 90% of what happens on the pitch is down to the players. 10% is down to the manager. And that's his exact reply to me. So, if that's the way. When players are making the decision, across the whole game, there are sliding doors moments in games. If they make the right pass, things good can happen. But if they make the wrong pass, something will go the wrong way. It's down to the individual player to try and work out what the right decision is. What's the right pass? When's the right time to play a flick? When's the right time to pass it back? When's the right time to pass it forward? How do I pass it forward? All these decisions, all made individually by each player. All 11, the goalkeepers. Do we throw out? Do I kick? Do I hold? Do I throw it early? All these things are not affected by the manager. The manager sets a team up in a certain way. He can stipulate the positions and how they want to be when they break forward, back, whatever. But at the end of the day, the ultimate game is played by the players, not the managers. But I will say, there is a reason why the best managers get paid far much more money than some of the players that they get. So the people like Pep and the others, because they are tactical geniuses. But the one thing about Pep is, never managed a bad team. Never managed a bad team. Who's done better? I'll ask you. Has Pep done better in his career with Barcelona, Bayern Munich and Manchester City? Or did Brian Clough do better with Derby County and Nottingham Forest? Because I'd argue, actually, Brian Clough did better with Derby County and with Nottingham Forest than what Pep did. It's a discussion to be had there, people. And perhaps we'll have it for another time. But I'll leave that there. Next up, there's a good friend, Mr. Chris Kinch. Father Chris says, hope you will. Do the kinds of decisions Moyes makes going into games like on Sunday, and decisions such as bringing Phillips on rather than someone like Antonio Thursday, give people more understanding for those of us who are Moyes out? Great podcast as always. You've not heard it yet, Chris, to say it's great. But anyway, are there kinds of decisions? Well, yes, I suppose it adds fuel to the fire, Chris, doesn't it? For those that dislike him or those that want him out, it just adds fuel to the fire. It does baffle me. You know, I'm not a Moyes out person, but then again, you know, I'm not Moyes in. If he gets sacked, you know, lost his job, I'd move on to the next manager, and that's the way I'll be. So I could give you loads of reasons why he shouldn't be sacked, but then I could probably give you as many reasons as why he should go at the end of the season. You know, we've each got our own minds to make up. I don't like the outright hatred, and that's the bit that really does get my goat, and that makes me look more Moyes in. It's those with the outright hatred that I can't deal with. But great to hear from you, Chris, and I hope to see you soon, mate. Let us know. Evening Nigel says, super Chrissy Mills. Oh, says, why the stooge ain't here? Can you tell us if Sean secretly hates the senior source for taking us to Olympic Thunderdome? I can tell you the truth about that, Chris. Of course he doesn't hate him. Sean loves the London Stadium. This Sean was the chief cheerleader for the London Stadium. And I'm sure it baffles people out there to know that the fact that our friendship grew from the fact that he was the most pro-move person in the supporters advisory board, and I was one of the three of the most anti, well, more, there was more than three to be fair, there was quite a few, but one, I was obviously one of the most antiest of anti-move people. But at the end of the day, you know, like in politics, you look past what you do, and you stand and have a drink with these people, and you know, I'd drink with anyone, and I'd have a drink with the most pro people going, and we'd become friends out of it. It wasn't just Sean; there was a few others there. I used to really enjoy their company and having a drink, and they were good days in the SAB. They were even good evenings after in the bar. That was for sure. Anyway, Chris says, since they closed their vegan £3.50 beer store in Olympic Park last week, the new owners put their prices up to £6.50 a pint. So they're taken to buying a crate from Westfield and standing in the same spot drinking. Are we wrong to do this, or are they just taking a piss? No, I think you should do it, Chris. That's the bit. It's a pity football's not a summer sport, because actually it probably would be nice to get a case of lager, sit by the canal, watch the water flow by and the ducks, and sit and have a beer before walking into the ground with just the cans. I'm not a big fan of canned lager, I must admit. Brady out, Sullivan out. But yeah, you keep doing that, Chris. Tell me where you're standing, I'll come and say hello. Next up is Ballon d'Orson. Here we go. Good to see the hard-earned work of away fans such as Ginge Cotty and Clive Allen being rewarded for their hard-earned priority points with a trip to Freiburg. Or maybe they just got lucky in the ballot like the bald stooge does. Well, I can see that. I don't know about Clive Allen. Maybe he was working out there. I don't know, you know. Cotty is the same. But what you got to remember is these people, they'll have connections at the club. The club gets a certain amount of tickets, and these people will get tickets. You know, there are lots of people out there, believe it or not, shock horror, that go to away games that don't go to away games. How they do it, good luck to them. That's what I say. It's a fucked up system in my eyes, but that is the system. And if you can play it, fair play to you. Well done. Oh, he says, any truth reports that Dodsey was thrown out of Fraline Frieda's entertainment parlour after trying to use club cash as a payment? Everyone in the bin, including the bald stooge. We couldn't dare comment on where Dodsey was hanging about in Germany or not. Michael Levy Jr., another good friend of mine, people, former customer of mine as well. No question. He says, checking in. Hope you're all. I'm good, Mike. How are you? Hope you're all good, mate. Still knocking them out. And he is knocking them out, people, because he's got a ticket evening coming up. The link is here on the Facebook page. It's an evening of soul and Motown with Michael Levy Jr. at Loughton. If you're in the area, if you want a good night out, go see him. If John Bucci will tell you, fantastic world. I'll tell you as well, he's a fantastic singer. He puts on a fantastic show, gets the crowds up and dancing. He is the soul singing superstar of Tenerife. We didn't give him that nickname for no reason, people. He earned it. He's an award winner himself as well. So get your tickets. And not forgetting Tenerife Nights. Oh, here we go at the Circus Tavern. This is more, might be up my street. It's only round the corner to me if it's the Circus Tavern. It looks like all the top singing stars of Tenerife will be playing the Circus Tavern. I'm going to have a look, people. I'm going to tell you when it is. Click on the link. Open it up. Tenerife Nights. 13th of April. It's coming up soon. Here's Michael. Time and location. 7 o'clock, 13th of April, Circus Tavern, Purfleet. And get your tickets now. I was looking to see how much the tickets. It doesn't say what the price is. But good luck to you, Mike. Coming home. Mike's coming home gig. Oh, there you go. Next up, it's old Ding-a-ling. How you doing, Stu? He says, evening, Nigel. He said, according to some social media outlets, he's gone... TalkSport being the main culprit. Calvin Phillips is potentially our worst ever signing. He goes, who's your worst ever West Ham signing? He said, I can think of many more that were much worse than Phillips, but I'll go with Roberto, especially in the modern era. What an absolute calamity it was. I think Karen Brady has to go down as the worst off the field, though. Going to that pit of misery is becoming more and more of a chore every time. Brady out. Then finishes. Wow, who's your worst ever West Ham signing? Blimey, there's a whole host. As a kid, we signed John Radford from Arsenal. We never scored a goal. He was the first one. Never really could take to him. There's been quite a few over the period. I mean, Saša Ilić. I mean, if ever was the worst player to play with West Ham, it had to be him. Vladimir Lebanc is one who Harry had quite a few of these strange signings that didn't work off. Let alone Mark Boogers as another one. So excuse me, sorry about that, people. But anyway. I would go for Saša Ilić. Modern day Roberto. You got Savio as well, though, haven't you? I mentioned earlier, Stu. So the list is endless. I'm sure people could come up with more. Right, here we go. David Taylor, who's a customer of Lens. So I've got to leave you alone, Dave. Can you tell me if we learn a Moyes' fate before season ticket prices are revealed, or when renewal window opens, or even before renewal window closes. I can't stand watching this absolute shit football anymore. Put us out of our misery. Moyes out. I mean, that's a very good question you asked there, Dave. In a way, is that how soon do the club and Moyes announce what they're doing? Do they announce straight away, no, he's staying? Do they announce straight away he's going? I'd imagine, though, if they announce he's staying, the decision may be delayed, maybe, till after season ticket renewal's taken place. So, and I suppose I have got sympathy with those that are so pissed off with it, don't want to really renew if he's going to be around. But what I would say to you, Dave, is come on, West Ham till we die. Not West Ham till we die or David Moyes leaves. You know, West Ham till we die. So, you know, don't let one manager drive you out. You know, it's like me with the ownership. Believe me, there is no way I'll stop going until they have left either the club or the earth. Either way, that's when I would even contemplate cutting back on my football, because they're not driving me out. Next up, it's the man who wrote one of the best books of West Ham football in recent times. It's Mick Clifford, even though he did sell it in the club shop, but, you know, the publishers can be a bit funny. Difficult question, but have you ever thought about walking away? Wow, I've just covered it. Just not going again, even having a season off. Doesn't have to be Sam related. Could be work or family or life. If no, what, if anything, could get you to walk away? It's one thing I have contemplated, Mick. Funny enough, the events of what happened 6 years ago disgusted me so much that I did say, that's it, not going. I didn't attend the Southampton home game. It was after the events of Swansea away. Certain things had happened in and around the club with the fan base, and it disgusted me to a point where I never thought I could actually support a club where fans had done what they did to fans, and where ownership had done what they had done to fans as well. That it felt like the enemy were definitely within the club. I watched that Southampton game at home, and I watched it with a mate. He joked that if I left now, when the game kicked off, if I left now, I'd make the second half. And he saw I was serious and went, yeah, I could do it, actually. I could probably still make it. We won 3-0, I think, that game. And I was back for the following home game, which happened to be the Burnley home game. And I was glad I was there for that. I won't go too much into really, you know, what caused me to feel that way, but I don't want to dwell on it. But I'd never been so disenfranchised from West Ham United as ever. And considering how anti I was to move. But what it showed to me as well is that I am a mug. I am a mug. You know, there's quite a few of us out there. We'll turn up and watch anything. If it's West Ham are playing, we'll turn up and we'll go. And that, you know, that does make me a mug. I know it and I accept it. And there's not really a lot. It's not really a lot that I can do about it now. I mean, I've just said it, you know, maybe I'll look at it once Sullivan and Brady are gone. Maybe I'll take another look at it. But if truth be told, I don't think realistically there's anything that can make me stop. You know, I don't smoke anymore. I only really drink at football. You know, West Ham is my vice. You know, football's my drug and West Ham's my drug of choice. So, and it ever will be. So, but that was probably the nearest. The events of 6 years ago prior to the Burnley game were what would have caused me to walk away. Brady out! David Taylor then did equate. He says, he's a first-time listener. The first-time question, he said. Brady out, Sullivan out, Moyes out. So he chipped in there. Next up, Mark Hunter said, were we historically behind the three other London clubs because they had richer benefactors at inception? So, when he talks about three other London clubs, that's obviously going to be Arsenal, Tottenham and Chelsea. Chelsea were actually formed, let's start with them. Chelsea were formed, I believe, 1905. So, 5 years after West Ham. Chelsea were formed by the owners of Stamford Bridge because it was a greyhound stadium and they wanted a football club. So, they wanted to draw the crowds in when there was no dog racing. So, they formed a football club called Chelsea. Whether they, I think that it might have been the Mears family that owned it up until Ken Bates bought it. So, they would have owned Chelsea for about 70-odd years. Even now, I think the only thing that makes Chelsea anything more than us, I think fan base wise, I think we're as big, if not bigger, than Chelsea. I think obviously worldwide they've probably got a few more, but that's because of the success. The thing that changed Chelsea was the Abramovich money. If you look at Chelsea before Abramovich, they'd only won the league once in 1955. With, funny enough, Ron Greenwood was a player then. It was just before Jimmy Greaves broke into the team. I think Peter Braybrook was a player as well in 1955 for Chelsea. He was definitely there around that time, Braybrook. And they'd won the European Cup Winners' Cup, but then again, so did we, and we won it before them. So they'd had FA Cup experience, but not as much as West Ham had. By 1980, we'd won it when we won it for the third time. I think that was more than Chelsea. I think Chelsea had still only had it in 1970-71, when they beat Leeds, which was the, not 71, it's 1970 final. They beat Leeds in the replay. So, if you look at that, you know, era, I think, no, actually, tell a lie, I think they won the Cup Winners' Cup a couple of times. They did win it, I think, in the 60s as well, after West Ham, of course. Tottenham were the first team. Then we won it in 65. I think Tottenham won it in 63 or 64. Spurs were formed by a cricket club who wanted a winter sport. And that's how Tottenham was formed. Obviously, I've always played in the Tottenham White Hart Lane area constantly. Northumberland Park area. As for their ownership, I'm not really au fait with how they were. They were the first club to float on the stock exchange. Always had a bit of money, I suppose. Success-wise, they were very successful. People may not realise this. Southern League, when the Football League was formed in the 1880s, down in London, that was formed by Midland teams. The original 12 were like the Midlands, like Derby's, Aston Villa were part of the originals, Notts County. And then you had the Northern teams like Blackburn. I don't know if Man United, Newton Heath were one of the originals, not sure if they were. I think Burnley were one of the originals, Everton were one of the originals. So it was predominantly Midlands, Northern based. Down here we had the Southern League that the Thames Ironworks joined, and then West Ham replaced the Thames Ironworks. We were in the Southern League, and we were in the Southern League till 1919, where we then joined the Football League. We left the Southern League. Tottenham were in the Southern League, and Arsenal were in the Southern League until the early 1900s. And Tottenham, when they won the FA Cup for the first time, I believe in 1904, are the only, or definitely the last, possibly the only, what are classed as non-league team. Because if you were Southern League, you was classed as non-football league. So they were the only non-league team to win the FA Cup in 1904. So, but then Tottenham have had that success. Title-wise, I'm not sure. Obviously, they won it in, I think they won it in 50-51 and 60-61. Not sure what other titles they had before that. not obviously they've not won the title since 60-61. So they had a few successes before that. But obviously they won the FA Cup a few times. Support base, I thought possibly, well, I mean, if you look at us, we've had minimal success. Yet we've really overachieved, I think, in our support base for the success that we've had. And perhaps that's because, frankly, we are the team of East London and Essex. West Ham was an Essex, you know, outlying borough when West Ham was formed. So you could say we're a team from Essex rather than East London. And then you got Arsenal, which is known as the Bank of England club, obviously. They had the, thanks to Herbert Chapman turn up. Herbert Chapman was manager of Huddersfield, won the title with Huddersfield, I believe, three times in the 1920s, got hired by Arsenal, turned them into the powerhouse of the South. They won the title, I believe, three times in the 30s, though Herbert Chapman, I think, had died while halfway through. I think they'd won one, maybe two. I'm not sure he was alive for the third title win, but they would win cups. They signed the best players, and generally they were successful in the 30s. Obviously, the 40s, the war turned up. The 50s, Arsenal didn't really, but then you had the second coming of Arsenal, which I believe around the late 60s, did the double in the 70s, and won cups galore, as they've always done. So Arsenal has always been the biggest team in London, you could say. Obviously started off life in the Royal Arsenal, which is Woolwich. Seven Dials was the name of the club. They played around South London, Plumstead, Chelten, around that area till 1913, when they moved into the Highbury Fields, which I don't know if it was owned by the Royal Arsenal as a sports ground or whatever, but anyway, they moved north. And I still find it quite funny that a lot of the Tottenham fans I know still call them Woolwich, because obviously they were Woolwich Arsenal until they moved, and they just dropped the Woolwich bit. So historically, I'm not sure about why we're behind the other three. I think we're behind two of them, and the other one, I think we're on par with Chelsea, and it's only Abramovich money equaled it out. I think you can now see support wise we're as big, if not bigger, than Chelsea. And trophy-wise, all they've ever won, realistically, majority is under Abramovich. Though we should have thanked Abramovich, because he helped save our arse when we went skint. Next up, it's Adam Levitt. How you doing, Ad? Hope you're doing well, he says. I was at the Di Canio on Saturday. Great, he said, but charging £25 to have a photo with him was not on. He said he saw Sean taking photos and videos like he's doing a movie or a promo, but it was a great night. Yeah, that was typical Sean. He was texting us, you know, it was like being there. It saved me paying the money, I suppose. But anyway, Mark Hunter says Brady out, but Moyes out this week as well. And I believe the last one for tonight, we've got to the end, believe it or not, people. It is, last but not least, it is Adam Levobarra. But the wheel fell off. And Adam says, he says, next time you're on your own, I'll come on and join you for a chinwag. He said, are you going to do any more history tours of the origins of West Ham for YouTube? Yes, I am, Ad. I will, once the weather's a bit warmer, I will be arranging a history tour. So if you'd like to come on, I generally try and keep it to a manageable amount. No, the most recent one I did was with Scandinavian Hammers. That took a couple of hours, and I only got them halfway round, and then I had to leave them to it because I ran out of time. But there was about 14, 15 of them. And that was one of the best groups, I must admit. If you're listening to Scandinavians, I wish I'd have took you all the way round, actually, because I thought you were fantastic people. But if anyone's interested, drop me a line, ping me a message, whatever. Get hold of me on Twitter. Say you'd be interested in coming on, and then I'll sort out. Probably, it'll be after Easter, So we'll probably look at a weekend maybe where West Ham's got either a Saturday home game that kicks off at 3 o'clock or 5:30, and we'll do it Saturday morning, or we'll do it on a Sunday before a game. But it'd have to be before 4:30 game. He finishes off his, have you managed to find any new West Ham historical facts recently? Something that you found interesting? Keep up the good work. Well, to finish it off, Ad, I'm still working through, believe it or not, every West Ham player to score an hat trick for the club. What I have discovered, believe it or not, was that near enough every hat trick was scored at home. 95% of hat tricks were scored at home. So we've never really travelled well. And in fact, we went nearly 20-odd years. So Billy Dare scored one, 1957, Bristol Rovers. The next away hat-trick was scored, I believe, in 1981 at Grimsby by David Cross. So 1957 to 1981. Not one away hat-trick was scored. And like London buses, the next away hat-trick after that was scored just a year later. Well, it wasn't a year later. The next away hat-trick was 6 months later, because that was scored by David Cross. And that was Tottenham away. So far, as well, it looks like David Cross is the only West Ham player to score two or more hat-tricks away from Upton Park. Not many have scored hat-tricks away. Jeff Hurst scored about 10 hat-tricks. What have we got here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So 9 hat-tricks I've got Jeff Hurst scoring, and all of them are at home. So I hope you found that interesting, Ad. I hope everybody else found it interesting. But I'm going to wrap it up now. I don't know how long I've been doing. I'm just going to have a look. Well, I've nearly done a full game of football. So I'm sure you've all had enough of me talking. I hope you've enjoyed it. Let me know. And hopefully, though, I never get to do it again, because someone else will come in and join me. But until next time, people, thanks for listening, and I'll see you all later.
Bobby Moore.
More than just a podcast.
Bobby Moore.
More than just a podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.